tell us your name.
My name's Kirsten, Kirsten Davies, and I work with Credo.
Cool. So what are your plans for next year?
What are my plans for next year? Well, I am looking forward to another year with Credo, another year spending lots of time with the Health and Science Faculty Network, particularly I am really looking forward to Credo small groups in 2015.
That's
so, yep, they've got a special place in my heart. I've got lots of energy and attention and time in small groups and small group leaders and helping them with all great small groups. Thank you. Now, if I stand here, am I going to be in the way and stop you kind of seeing that, or is that all right? I feel like I want to see you, but let you see the screen as well. It's great to join again in public talks tonight. I'm usually here on a Thursday night. Tonight's been a fun week, getting to go along on Tuesday as well. Over the past few weeks at Credo Public Talks, if you've been along to some of them, you'll know that we've been exploring the great source of wisdom that the Book of Proverbs is for us. This is wisdom that informs and shapes how we navigate life in all the various day-to-day situations that we face. It draws on observations that they're generally true from all facets of life about the actions and the reactions of those who live well and wisely, but also of those who don't, of those whose lives are characterised by foolish behaviour. If you want to live well, if you want to master the art of living, then you need to understand anger and know how to handle it in yourself and also in other people. Because everyone has anger problems, or at least an anger problem. Anger is a universal problem. You'll find it in every culture. It's experienced by every generation. No one's isolated from the presence of anger, just as no one's immune from its poison. It permeates every one of us, and it can spoil our closest relationships. So today, we'll look at three things that you need to know about anger if you're going to live wisely. Its dangerous power, how good anger goes wrong, and thirdly, how to deal with anger. So they're the kind of things that we'll hone in on as we explore what we can learn from the Proverbs about anger. So, firstly, anger's dangerous power. Anger's like the dynamite of the soul. It's this strong and passionate emotion. It's explosive. It's got the power to disintegrate things, like an explosive does. First of all, anger can disintegrate your body. Proverbs 14, 29 and 30 are up there on the screen. They say, whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Perhaps depending on what version of the Bible you're looking at, you might find that the word envy is translated as passion or something similar. But these sentences grouped next to each other seem to build two pictures. A positive picture, that patience and a peaceful heart are life-giving and they characterise a wise person. And there's a negative picture, isn't there? Foolishness, folly, is linked with responses of strong passion such as anger and envy. These emotions are described as life-destroying. All kinds of research show that anger is really bad for your body. Unmanaged anger can eventually cause harm to many different systems of your body. Some of the problems that research has linked to anger include headaches, digestion problems, abdominal pain, insomnia, anxiety and depression, high blood pressure, skin problems like eczema. Anger's far worse for your heart than anxiety or than sorrow or than any other emotion. It's even harder on your heart than extreme physical exertion. Unmanaged anger sets you up for heart attacks, it sets you up for strokes, it sets you up for heart disease. In one study, almost 13,000 subjects in the study, they found that the individuals with the highest levels of anger had twice the risk of coronary artery disease and three times the risk of heart attack compared to subjects with the lowest levels of anger. Some scientists now think that chronic anger might be more dangerous than smoking and obesity as a factor that will contribute to early death. Nothing rots the bones, nothing disintegrates your body like anger does. And secondly, anger doesn't just disintegrate your body, but it also disintegrates relationships and community. Proverbs 29, verse 22, an angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. When you get angry, you throw words around, don't you? Like weapons. Angry words have an enormous amount of damaging power. They wound people. They wound and destroy relationships, sometimes forever. Angry outbursts and angry responses provoke other people to get angry. Anger disintegrates community. Thirdly, anger disintegrates your ability to even make wise choices at all. Look again at Proverbs 14, verse 29. Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. When you get angry, it distorts your view of things. It distorts your view of the situation, your view of yourself, your view of the world, and your view of others, so that you continue to make bad and destructive choices. Proverbs 19, verse 19 says, a hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you will have to do it again. And probably again, and again, and again. Anger disintegrates our ability to make wise choices. And lastly, anger has the power to disintegrate your spiritual health. We often try to deny our angry feelings. And denial might lead us to think that we don't need to deal with our anger. But we do. Not just because it's damaging physically and to community and to your ability to make wise choices, but also because it's damaging spiritually. When we're angry, we lose our clear conscience before God and before other people. And then we need to contend with our guilt. It disrupts our peace with God, and it hinders our prayers and our ability to come close to God as we pray. The worst result of our anger is that it displeases God. It grieves him. Proverbs 28:13 reminds us that whoever conceals their sins does not prosper, but the one who confesses and renounces them finds mercy. So anger's like destructive dynamite that disintegrates your physical health, your relationships, your ability to make wise decisions, and your spiritual health. Can you see how huge its destructive power is? When it comes to understanding anger, we also need to understand something of God's anger as well as our own anger, and understand how good anger goes wrong. There seem to be a couple of ways that angry behaviour emerges. You probably recognise yourself in one of these descriptions. Some people seek to hide their anger. They clam up and internalise it. They might look cool and controlled on the outside, but inside they stew and steam, often growing more and more in feelings of resentment and bitterness. For other people, other people's anger comes quickly bursting out, maybe in explosive outbursts or venting. They blow their stacks, basically, blowing their stacks with cruel or sharp words, maybe even flying fists or slamming doors. Neither of these are good options. When it comes comes to anger, the ideal in Proverbs, it's not concealing it or pretending that there's no anger, nor is it blowing your stack. It's not no anger. It's not blowing up anger, but it's slow anger. According to Proverbs, the wise person is slow to get angry. There's a few Proverbs up on the screen there. Fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offence. Slow anger. That's the ideal. Why is that? I think it's because that's how God is. Slow anger, the mark of a wise person, is a characteristic of God that we see over and over again in the Bible. When Moses meets God on Mount Sinai, we can read about that in Exodus chapter 34. This is how God declares his name to Moses. It's how he reveals his very essence. He declares, "The Lord, the Lord, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion and sin." Do you know, almost these exact words are used to describe God in at least 9 different places in the Bible. We see God described in this way, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. God gets angry, but he's slow about it. Lots of people I've chatted with around UTS have trouble with this idea. "I believe in a God of love," they say, "but not an angry God. That's not the God I believe in." But if you have a God who never gets angry, you can't have a God of love. Because if you never get angry at anything, then you don't really love anything. If you love and you see the thing you love threatened, you become angry. If you're indifferent, you're not in love. True love always gets angry. Anger in its pure form, in its uncorrupted form, is simply love moved to deal with a threat that endangers someone or something you love. But here's where our anger nearly always differs from God's anger. God's anger always results from his love and his justice. It's always against sin and evil. His anger is always against all forms of wickedness. God's anger arises from his judgment against evil, and unlike us, he perceives evil with total accuracy. God's anger is always self-controlled. It never results in God losing his temper or retaliating in some vengeful way. Plenty of people justify their anger as righteous anger. Maybe you've been tempted to do that or inclined to do that sometimes. Perhaps there are times where you feel like you have a right to be angry given a certain situation. A lot of people think that their anger is righteous, like God's anger. But when we're honest, I think we find that nearly all our anger has been corrupted. Good, pure anger, stemming from love for God and his character and his purposes, it's turned bad. This is certainly the impression we get from the scriptures, as the Bible describes human anger. So how can we tell if our anger is justified? Tim Keller is an American pastor and teacher, and he makes this suggestion. He suggests we try this. He says, look at the things in your heart that most anger you, And then ask yourself this question. What am I defending? What is this big thing that's so important to me that I'll do anything to protect it or hang on to it? When you answer that question, you'll probably have an answer to who or what your heart loves the most. When you do this, the likely result is that you'll be embarrassed. Because more often than not, when we ask ourselves that question, we discover that it's our own ego, our own reputation, our pride or selfishness, that's what we instinctively seek to defend. And then we lash out in anger against anything or anyone that threatens to get in the way or stop us getting what we want when we want it. St. Augustine pointed out that the biggest problem that we have is that our loves are disordered. There are many things that we love that are good things, aren't there? But I think the problem comes when we turn them into ultimate things. We build our lives on them. We look to them to give us the happiness or the security that only God can really provide. Maybe that could be a relationship, or your reputation, or financial success or security. And then if there's anything that threatens that thing that we love and depend on more than anything else, our response is a disproportionate anger that just wants to disintegrate that threat. Perhaps this is why you might get more angry about being snubbed by someone at uni than when there's an injustice toward a group of people in another part of the world. If gaining approval, if your reputation is more important to you deep down than God's glory or his justice, then you have to have it, which stops you being able to kind of shrug off that snub. We need to be on the lookout for signs of anger creeping into our hearts that are out of proportion to the particular act or event that might have triggered it. Maybe your occasions to be on the lookout for disproportionate anger are in doing group assignments. Is the anger that brews inside you or that you direct at your classmates in sharp comments, is that springing from your concern for their well-being and success as students? Or from your ego and concern for your own marks and reputation? Or maybe the occasion to be on the lookout for signs of disproportionate anger is in your workplace, as you pass the blame for a minor error. In which case, you'll need to ask yourself, what are you really defending? What's so important that you'll need to do whatever it takes to protect or keep it? The book of Proverbs reminds us that we're responsible for our own behaviour and decisions. We can't blame our family members, our friends, our group assignment partners, our genes, our parents, our church leaders, our society, our hormones, or even the devil for our anger. The cause of our anger lies deep in our own hearts. Proverbs 19, verse 3 says, "A person's own folly leads to their ruin, yet their heart rages against the Lord." And in Proverbs 20, verse 9, "Who can say, 'I have kept my heart pure, I am clean and without sin'?" Once we realise this, then we're in a position to start to deal with anger. And that's our third point for tonight, how to deal with anger. Anger is so prevalent in our lives, both our own and the anger of others, that if we're going to live well, we need to know how to handle it wisely so that we're not consumed by it. I think Proverbs suggests to us that a twofold strategy is needed to deal with anger. We need to deal with both the roots of anger and the fruits of anger. When I was a kid, we lived in the Adelaide Hills, just outside Adelaide, and we'd moved to this place that Had quite a big kind of front yard and huge backyard, lots of space, at least it seemed enormous when I was really little. But one of the first jobs that my parents taught us in the garden was how to help do the weeding. And I can still remember, actually, my initial enthusiastic attempts. They usually resulted in this handful of, like, green, weedy leaves clenched in my little fist. But there was still this kind of lonely, sticky-out stem of weed still poking up through the ground. And I remember Mum and Dad kept telling me, you've got to get the weeds out by the roots, because otherwise they just keep growing back. Get the roots out or the weeds will return. And they're very patient. They taught me how to use that pronged kind of weeding tool thingamajiggy. You've seen those. There's these little weeding tools that are, they've got a couple of prongs, and you put the two prongs on either side of the base of the weed, and you kind of just kind of rock it on the ground and lever it back, and it kind of levers up the whole weed plant out of the dirt. So you get it, roots and all. You can lift out the whole of it. I was so proud when I mastered how to use the weedy tool thing and could get them out properly. You just couldn't stop me weeding. There were all these holes in the ground everywhere. But if we're to deal with anger, we need to rip out those roots of anger that lie deep in our hearts. We need to identify and acknowledge where our love is disordered. We need to recognise and we need to uproot the idols of our hearts. Maybe our pride, our love of reputation, or our selfishness. And then we need to repent of those things and receive God's forgiving and enabling grace. Remember these words. We've already seen them in Proverbs 28. Whoever confesses their sins does not prosper. Or whoever conceals their sins does not prosper. But the one who confesses and renounces them finds mercy. We'll only be able to make any serious strike at the fruit of our anger once we've attempted a serious strike at the roots. And by fruit, I mean the behaviour that results from our anger. Proverbs seems to talk a lot about the behaviour that results from our anger. In Proverbs 15, we get a pair of verses that are essential for wise anger management. Verse 1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And verse 18, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. Tackling angry behaviour involves putting off and putting on. Notice the put on qualities that are contrasted with anger in these verses. We need to learn both gentleness and patience. And as we do so, we promote peace. When we fail to react in these godly ways, we provoke anger from others. We manage to stir up further anger and strife. Conflict escalates and calmness evaporates. Proverbs highlights for us another specific quality of wise living, a quality that's lacking in people who are quick-tempered and hot-headed, and that's self-control. Self-control must replace angry exploding. Self-control feels like it's becoming rarer and rarer in our society. We see evidence of its absence all around us in lots of ways. Just this week, just the other day, I was reading an article on the SBS website. It was an article that spoke about a woman named Rosie Batty, and was referring to the coronial inquest over the murder of her young son, Luke, when his father violently beat him to death with a cricket bat. Perhaps you heard about that on the news when it happened. Following his death, it emerged in the media that both Rosie and Luke had been victims of domestic violence for a number of years. And as I read, the article went on to talk about a new national inquiry that set up to examine the prevalence and impact of domestic violence. and expressed great concerns that domestic violence has become epidemic in Australia. The most recent survey undertaken by the Australian Bureau of Statistics found that 17% of Australian women, that's nearly 1.5 million, had experienced some physical form of domestic violence since the age of 15. And this was actually only counting violence at the hand of the partners they were currently living with. So it almost doubled when they counted violence at the hand of perhaps former partners or partners that they didn't live with. But here's where I was just totally astounded as I read this next bit. Let me quote it. It said, "Results of the national survey of 17,500 people conducted by VicHealth also found that 1 in 5 Australians believe domestic violence could be excused if people get so angry they lose control." 1 in 5 Australians believe it's excusable if you get so angry you lose control. How terrifying. How very sad that our society believes that it's captive to the fruit of anger and can have no power to overcome it. Because Proverbs paints a very different picture. Look at this pair of quite arresting word pictures that contrast anger with patience and self-control. The first one comes in Proverbs 16, verse 32. "Better a patient person than a warrior, one with self-control than one who takes a city." True strength in God's eyes means gaining victory over your temper more than your enemies. The explosive tough guy really knows nothing about true strength. And the second metaphor is just as striking. Proverbs 25, verse 28. "Like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control." Ancient cities depended on stone walls to shield them from baddies, maybe raiding bandits, or wild animals or armies that might conquer them. In the same way, we need to realise that blowing your stack with uncontrolled venting and angry and aggressive outbursts invites invasions from spiritual enemies. A person lacking in self-control is spiritually vulnerable. A person who can't control or restrain their angry responses is easy prey for the lures and the temptations of the world and the devil. And here's the thing, lack of self-control doesn't just leave you vulnerable to foolish anger, it leaves you exposed and vulnerable to unwise and destructive patterns in many areas of life. Have you noticed that these qualities that we must learn to put on, gentleness, patience and self-control, are all fruit of the Spirit that are described in Galatians chapter 5. God himself enables us by his Spirit as we seek to put off destructive and inflammatory angry behaviour and to put on these new behaviours. And I'd venture to say that you cannot truly master the art of living and handling anger without receiving God's gracious help and enabling. The way that God's enabled us to live well and flourish and to deal with the very real problem that anger creates, it's most profound. Look again at Proverbs 19, verse 3. "A person's own folly leads to their ruin, yet their heart rages against the Lord." We want this and we want that and we don't get it and we get mad. We get mad at God. We often don't admit it, but we get mad at him. We direct our rage at him, perhaps our disproportionate rage, our totally unjustifiable rage. And the proof of this is that when he became vulnerable, when he became killable, we killed him. We took a hold of him and mocked him. We beat him and we killed him. Do you see what God has done? On the cross, Jesus absorbed our disordered rage without revenge or payback. And he didn't just take the anger that we directed at him that he didn't deserve. He also took the anger that we deserved ourselves. In the Garden of Gethsemane, just before he was arrested to be crucified, he prayed in anguish, "Take this cup from me. But if it's your will, okay, I'll drink the cup." What's the cup? Well, everywhere in the Old Testament, the cup is God's cup, the cup of God's anger, the anger that we deserve because we've rejected him and we're ruining each other and his loved creation. On the cross, Jesus took the anger that we cast at him that he didn't deserve, and he also took God's anger against sin that we truly do deserve. And he took it with a gentle word. "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." If you see Jesus taking our disordered rage and anger at infinite cost to himself, then you can see God's ultimate curing surgical strike against the cancer of our sinful anger. He forgave our sins so that he could embrace us, the sinners. And if you're melted by that knowledge, by the knowledge of how he responded to our disordered rage, then when others wrong you, you can do the same. Once you've experienced God's ultimate surgical strike, where he loves the sinner but hates the sin, then you're going to be able to be free to turn around and do it yourself. Because your ego needs have changed. Your ego needs aren't there anymore when you have the love of God, when you know the security of his love. You're freed from being captive to the fruit of anger or from believing that you have no power to overcome it. You're free to be an agent who responds to anger with gentleness and patience and self-control. And that's what I call artful living.